I was so secretive that even my own wife wondered why I was being so secretive. I dreaded more than anything else a telephone call from Al Haig at night for fear that Al would say something on the phone.
Yeah.
Because Al would work at 3 o'clock in the morning, he'd forget it was 3 o'clock in the morning. He'd call me and ask me a question. I would not permit Radford, as I said earlier, to tell anyone where I was.
Well, I think we've covered the ground pretty well. Do you have anything?
I was going to say that I think you did cover the point on corroboration. I mean, we have Radford saying something, and we also have, to some degree, Wellander corroborating his testimony. And specifically, and John did ask you on the point of his usefulness on going on the trips, and both Radford and Wellander have said that, you know, there was an advantage to him going on the trips and that he could be useful in bringing back things. Now, this is specifically what we asked, and
yeah.
You said, what if, that's why I was asking you earlier, you know, what in the world was the advantage? Okay, we can talk about service to the president and to Henry and to the chairman, but specifically, you know, did anything come out of these that were these trips that were useful?
Well, this perhaps sounds like a silly reason, but it was, I mean, if we're looking for motivation, maybe two or three of these things will click. I felt that it reflected credit on the Navy to have a Navy yeoman go with an Army general. I even joked with Haig about it. I said, I'm glad we have someone qualified. Haig said, well, we don't in the Army train people that can go out and take dictation. So this was certainly a motive of mine. If I felt that sending my Navy yeoman on a presidential trip would reflect credit on the Navy, I would do my work myself for 2 weeks. Now, I can type, and I write longhand, and I made 4 or 5 trips a day back and forth to the Pentagon without Radford. And incidentally, I worked around Radford an awful lot. If anyone thinks that everything I knew during my tenure with Radford was shared by Radford, they're wrong, because I just never trusted anyone, including Radford, to the place where I ever gave any two people two pieces of the common puzzle.
Now, I'm going to make 2 requests of you.
Yes, sir.
And obviously, your response to them is up to you.
I'll do whatever you ask, sir.
Pose. I'm going to suggest that we have a problem here that may be susceptible of resolution through the polygraph. And I'm going to request of you that you make yourself available for a polygraph examination without any inference, without any suggestion or innuendo on my part that in any way impugns the correctness of what you told me. But we have now 2 witnesses under polygraph who have testified along a certain line, and you can be very helpful to us in resolving this situation. Now, I'm very much aware of the thing you suggest about not reducing put another way, not involving any more people than is necessary in this inquiry, but I know you recognize the seriousness of some of the contentions that have been made, and it's important to the President that we resolve them as correctly as possible, without doing damage to the essential relationship between the president and the chairman, which really is the most important of all.
Well, this is what worries the chairman. He's very embarrassed about this, and I think would like to talk to the president about it.
I think he should, and I think he should initiate the conversation. And if you want to pass that guidance along to him for me.
How soon should he do it, sir?
Well, I don't know that, but I think the president is, and Henry too, for that matter, are struck by the fact that the chairman has not been forthcoming. Now, the president had the attorney general talk with the chairman, and he did that in the hopes that some bilateral exchange would develop, and that was not an entirely satisfactory conversation, apparently. So my feeling would be that perhaps in the first instance, the admiral might want to talk to Henry about.
Where is Henry in Key Biscayne?
He's in Key Biscayne, but it's a matter of some considerable concern, and it might be worth the Admiral making the occasion for the conversation. And it's not for me to say,
right.
But at least I think he ought to take the first step toward Henry in this. And then, if a conversation with the President involves, fine. I think the President feels that there is no disruption of their relationship.
Well, this is what I know, that this is what Admiral Moore is concerned about. And I told Admiral Moore that I am perfectly willing to talk to Doc Cook or Dave Young, but I am somewhat apprehensive about a widespread interrogation that is going to elicit information involving the sensitive relationships between the individuals concerned. Because
you can tell the Admiral, or I'll tell him, I'd be very glad to talk with him, that there's no intention to broaden this beyond the scope that we've gone. As you're the last contact, and you're only last because you were farthest away.
Right.
But that I think it's important that the Admiral and Henry be in touch with one another. And Henry has had the feeling that it was the Admiral's place to come to him.
I think that I ought not to be thinking for the chairman, because he obviously is a man of great personal integrity too. I think he is embarrassed about this, and he feels somewhat inhibited from coming in the midst of other of his underlings being interrogated.
I think it'd be a very constructive thing for him.
I think, could I make a recommendation? And I think I know this relationship better than anyone. I know it better than Wellander.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you should ask Tom Moore to come over.
Talk to me?
Yes, sir.
Fine.
And I think he should come as a matter of urgency.
All right. I'll do it today.
Now, I have attempted in the past hour and a half to give you as candid and as frank a description of the theology behind my operation that I could. I don't know anything about a polygraph. I don't know how it's given, and I don't know the circumstances under which it's given, and I don't even know how reliable it is. But I can tell you, sir, that the questions that you have asked are far more complex than I think can be subjected to polygraph. I can take three or four sentences to explain to you why Radford might think something was being clandestinely recovered or acquired, whereas if someone says to me on a polygraph, do you think Radford ever got a paper for you without the knowledge of the individual from whom he was getting it, I would have to say yes.
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't want there to be conflict in my testimony.
I understand.
And I want to stand on what I told you. And let me say one other thing, sir, that I have never had a job in my 30 years in the Navy that I have filled with greater esteem and true dedication than this one. 30 months of being the liaison officer between Tom Moore and Henry Kissinger is tough. And there's only one officer in the armed forces that I know of that has a worse job than mine, and it's Al Haig, and he has to do it all the time.
Yeah.
And I was really delighted when it came my turn to go. So I could talk to you straight to the shoulder. I could walk into the President, and I could tell the President just exactly what I've told you without the slightest doubt of there being any dishonesty in what I'm saying. I'm just afraid that there are so many different colorations that can be put into one of these things. It looks terrible.
Well, let me just speak to you in candor on this. Admiral Wellander came in here, and he sat in that chair, and I put substantially the same questions to him that I put to you. And he said, I'm not proud of this, but he said, it happened. He said, when I took this job over, this fellow was earmarked for me as a bird dog. Did bird dog. He brought me all kinds of stuff. I conceived of it to be my job, as I believe it was my predecessor's job, to transmit material to the chairman, and I did that. He said, it dishonors me to tell you that, but I did it. Now,
well,
on the other hand, and he went into chapter and verse as to what had happened and on what events and so on. Now, by contrast, you have come and same questions, integrity conscious, that you put rigorously imposed security precautions on this man. It's the same man, and it's like day and night. So that we have one administration in which this man is apparently a paragon, and then we have another in which the same man is the essence of corruption. And I just can't explain it.
I'm not sure that you understand one thing. I have not said I did not send things to the chairman. It was my job and duty to send it. And whether I don't feel dishonored, I didn't particularly like the job of being the interface between these two gentlemen. All I'm saying is that I never obtained, to my knowledge, documents under conditions that would involve someone going into someone's briefcase. Now, as I said, the only time I think anything accidentally got from someone's briefcase into what I would consider my papers were Al's rough draft notes of his trip.
Well, but you see my dilemma.
I've got a course of
conduct that suddenly changes.
You mean in this man?
Yes. And I don't have any way to account for that.
I don't either. And I can only deduce one thing, sir. That either Admiral Wellanders went further than I did, or we were both doing the same thing, and Radford was interpreting his acquisition of papers for me to be far more surreptitious than I was.
Except that, you see, under Admiral Wellander, he went in and he took the total bundle of messages out of the INL and brought them to him and said, look through these and see if there's anything in here that would serve the interest.
But he never did that to me.
Yeah. Well,
He certainly never said he did that to me.
Admiral Wellner told me that he did it.
For me?
No, for him. And I just don't account for this difference in the man's course of
conduct. Unless he was encouraged to go and do it. I knew that there were messages in INL that I was not privy to. So be it. Sometimes I didn't like it. Sometimes I resented the fact that I was not taken into the confidence of the people for whom I was working. But I never went and took the messages. As a matter of fact, my only operation with INL was to cut down the volume of messages that they were getting that I did not feel were useful. Now, I don't quite see how Radford could get the messages from INL.
Well, he was impressed as a messenger. And they asked him to make distribution of a whole bundle of material.
Who made him?
Well, either coming back and forth between the West Wing or the INL, or taking stuff. If he were going over and they had stuff to go over, they might give him the package that was coming over. And on his way over, he would stop by and let Wellander look through the package.
Oh, well, no. I'm getting a completely different impression of it. I never saw anything like that. And furthermore, if I felt that Radford was being used as that type of a messenger, I would have stopped.
Well, it was not all that often. But it was, you know, if he were bringing stuff
for
you.
For specific, memorable occasions. Well, and I'm making this explanation to
you. Yeah, well, I think it's all clear to me.
That we find in this testimony.
No, I first of all, I think that I probably delivered as many papers, bulk, 10 papers, 20 papers, 30 papers to the chairman as Wellander. But I have no recollection of ever obtaining information by virtue of a man being a messenger. Now, I think I just can't conceive of that operation.
Okay, I said I had two requests of you. One would be that you advise yourself of the polygraph procedure. I'm not sure that we'll ask you to take a polygraph, but I would like you to ready yourself for the possibility.
Well, how do you mean by ready it?
Well, you've asked certain questions about reliability and so on.
I'm willing to take it without any further posturing on that, sir. I mean,
I'm
not worried about that.
Fair enough. Let's just leave it at that, then. The second is that you not discuss the content of this interrogation with anyone.
I will not.
Okay. Fair enough. Then I'm open to suggestions with regard to Admiral Moore. I consider myself not the best person for him to talk to in respect of his relationship with the president. I think the attorney general is, and they have had a conversation. If it will help him in his functioning, I'd be very happy to visit him.
He wants to see the attorney general. He told me that last night.
Wants to see him again?
Yes, because I think he thinks that the attorney general has a misunderstanding of something that he said.
All right.
I just know that
I will cause that to happen.
And
I think that's a better way to go, really.
Well,
because the president has designated the attorney general as the man he wants to have talk with the chairman, and I think we ought to keep it in that alignment. I am ready, willing, and able, but I would want to talk to the president first, and I'd be happy to do that if the chairman wants me to. But I really think that what I ought to do is cause the attorney general to talk to him again.
When you get into one of these liaison roles, it's sort of an insidious thing. Because where propriety stops and ends is a very vague thing. And I know that. And sometimes I came upon papers that I realized I really were beyond my purview. And I did as much as I could to compartmentize my mind. And I said, okay, no one knows about this. I told Admiral Moore early on, and I told General Wheeler before him, that there were many things that I would become privy to in the White House that I did not feel that I should reveal to them. And I also told Henry and Haig on a number of occasions that there were things that I knew from my dealings in the Pentagon that I really felt should come through other channels. And I was constantly concerned on what should come from the Laird channel and what should come from the chairman's channel. Whether or not this liaison function, and I think this is important, because what we have done here is eliminate a channel of information that has existed for 10 years. I asked General Goodpaster, when he came back for the change of command, whether he felt that this job should continue, because I knew that he had created the bilateral job of Haig and me, at least I had, and he said, absolutely. He said, I think that it's in the best interest of the president that we keep this channel open. He told me, and I knew that he had this job at one time during the Eisenhower administration. It's not the most satisfying job in the world, Mr. Ehrlichman.
Sure of that. You're the membrane between two articulating joints.
Well, not only that, but I am concerned that those people doing interrogation might stumble across things in the formal course of interrogation that they really need not know.
Well,
and this is why
there's no interrogation going forward now.
Well, I was supposed to go to the Defense Department, and I know that they had Mr. Stewart ready to come over here this morning, and apparently you turned that off.
That's right.
Am I to be interrogated over there?
No.
Well, not that we know of, although
well,
that's defense is, as they're going along the lines of looking into the Anderson part of the leak,
which I know nothing
right,
about.
That was the particular thing in which they're concerned.
Let them know that we don't want the Anderson.
Okay.
Further.
Okay.
I don't want this thing brought.
Now this may sound silly, and I don't want you to think that I'm frivolous, because I understand the severity of this, and I want to get to the bottom of it just as much as you do. But I just want to know how long I'm going to have to stay here, because for the first Christmas in 7 years, my sons have all assembled in California, and I do have a command of 18,000 men that I am supposed to be convening over a Christmas celebration tomorrow evening.
You're free to go as far as I'm concerned.
I can come back, sir,
No. In
3 hours.
Well, if we need you, we'll call you.
I want to help on anyway.
I think you can go straight from here to the airport as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, sir. Let me say one other thing that may sound silly. I designed my career and my sea duty so that I would be available to come back here and help this administration in national security affairs, not in the liaison role. I would refuse to take the liaison role under any cost, even if one still existed. And so what I'm saying to you is not based on someone who is evading or ducking his responsibility. I'm talking about someone who feels that he is still part of this official family.
I understand.
And I told Admiral Moore last night that while I think I have sufficient discretion, I know I have discretion, never to reveal some of the things that went on in the decision-making process. I don't feel we have anything to gain by pursuing it until the principals can get together. I don't even know that Henry is fully aware of the magnitude of the abolishment of the job and what it's going to mean to him in the way of timely information. I can just deduce that if four or five chairmen of the JCS plus General Goodpaster, who I think is one of the president's confidants, feels that this job was in the best interest of the president, then I was willing to take this job for 30 agonizing months, wondering just when someone was going to say, how did Henry Kissinger know that? And it happened. It's happened a lot of times. Henry was postured for questions that the president wanted answers to in a timely fashion.
In other words, it works both ways.
Well, I would estimate, sir, that in the transmission of information, more information came to Henry than ever left here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, some information had to leave here in order for me to maintain credibility with the chairman.
Sure.
If all I did was to go to the chairman and say, Henry wants to know this, Henry wants to know this, the president wants to know this. President's been on the phone to me personally.
Did you ever discuss that general philosophical thrust or that realization of the role with Admiral Welder?
Not into the degree that I did, sir, or with you. When I came here, I asked for terms of reference. I said, how am I supposed to do this? They said there are no terms of reference because the two principals are different. Walt Rostow was completely different than Henry. My predecessor, General Ginsburg, was really a two-headed individual, much more than I, although he worked over here, because he would go and write papers in the Pentagon, and he'd come over here and write papers, and I would be on many trips. I attended almost all the presidential conferences in the Pacific during the Vietnam War, and I was brought into this job because I have a deep continuity of how this war started and what we've done. But I never was able to get someone to tell me how I was supposed to perform. And I did not feel that it was fair to tell Admiral Welder.
What was your impression of how Ginsburg operated? Which way did the flow run during his administration?
Well, he was more of the Hague than me. And yet he was, I guess, much more ambidextrous than me. He had a relationship with the Secretary of Defense, so it was sort of a triad. I really didn't have. I suggested, are we off the air or what?
No, we're on the air. Do you want to go off the air?
Oh, I if you want to philosophize about the job.
No, I'm just curious about Ginsburg and how he operated.
I really don't know. I just felt when I came in, there was no clear definition of how he did his job.
Mm-hmm.
He left the job the 19th day of January. they didn't retain them long enough to turn over to me. And so I walked into an office that had a colonel, Bill Lemnitzer, there. And he filled me in a little bit. But I simply had to establish my own perspectives and my own goals, and I hope it doesn't sound too esoteric, but I felt that if I served the president only, then whatever happened, I'd be protected.
You'd be right, yeah.
And I'd be right.
Robbie, did the role in any way change from Wheeler to when Moore came in, or did you treat them both exactly the same, or did you have a closer relationship with Moore?
I probably had a closer relationship with General Wheeler, but General Wheeler had virtually no contact in the White House, and I can count maybe on one hand the times in a year that he was here.
Other than in meetings?
There weren't very many meetings. There were National Security Council meetings, and then there were the low-level meetings. Before you got here, Dave, you have to realize that the WASAG met at the subordinate level, the lieutenant general level, in which they really could not illuminate the problem for the president. And I can remember the one instance where the president said, "You've been meeting for 2 hours and you still can't tell me anything about the EC-121. That was the morning I came in here at 6:20, and we worked on the EC-121 incident. So I followed it through that day, and by 11 o'clock, the president was very properly impatient that the WASAG had been unable to develop for him alternatives. And this was almost coincidental with Bus Wheeler retiring. General Wheeler was very ill his last 4 or 5 months, and Admiral Moore really moved in and was acting chairman much of the time because General Wheeler was recovering from a severe heart attack. So Admiral Moore had greater access to the White House probably than any chairman in the history of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, would be my guess. Now, this has not been something, sir, that has been welcomed in all areas of the bureaucracy. And he was welcome because he had answers. And he had answers because
he knew the questions.
He knew the questions that Henry was going to ask. You would think that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff would be expected to be able to answer these questions on call, but they can't, sir. The questions are complicated. For example, what is the readiness of the 82nd Airborne to jump right now? Tom Moore can't answer that. I doubt if the commanding general down at Fort Benning could do it unless he thought about it for an hour and said, well, I can get two brigades ready in 2 hours. These are the kind of questions that I surfaced. In the process of doing it, I came across other information. I realize that. But where I came back to it, I said when I left here this spring to go to sea, it was to check this off so I would be available to the president to serve him for 4 more years. I think it would be a real paradox, if that's the word, for me to have let the president down here. I just don't think that I could ever forgive myself, and so I don't think I did. I think I served him well, and I think I served him honorably.
Robbie, you haven't seen Henry or Al since you've been back.
No, as a matter of fact, I'm irritated that Al would appear not to have to spoke to this thing. I mean,
we haven't asked him to, and we've been going about this very deliberately without doing that.
I mean, for me to fly 6,000 miles and say what the relationship of me to Al Haig is, didn't seem fair, because
that isn't the question. It isn't, and that isn't the question. The question is obviously much more. beyond his ken in that. We haven't asked for any vouchsafes around any which way, because it doesn't question credibility, and it's simply a question of fact and what happened in certain circumstances. So I think you'll understand that he has not been involved that way. But I just want to say to you that I think you've been very forthcoming in making answers to the questions, and I've been very blunt with you.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean,
understand the spirit in which I have.
The buck stops with us, sir. I mean, if you can't ask me a question and give me an answer, I don't deserve to be a flag officer in the President's Navy.
That's the way I felt about it, so I appreciate your attitude on this. And as far as I'm concerned, you're free to go. I'll give General Hughes a call right now, tell him I don't care to have you interrogated over there, and that I have told you that you're free to go.
Yes, sir.
And then beyond that, I don't know where the interlocks are, but
if I have one regret, I don't know that I could have briefed Admiral Wellander better.
Well, it's a very personal relationship in this job.
I was afraid if I told him this is the way I did it, and it blew it, then I would feel guilty. So I simply said to him, you've got the most sensitive relationship possible here. You've got to do everything that you can to protect the President, and you've got to do everything to keep low-key, low-profile, and you're on your own. I don't think, for example, sir, that they could brief you to take over your job. You had to come in here and take it, or Bob Halderman. And surely there was no turnover of the presidency. Now, down at my low level, there could be no turnover, because I didn't want to tell Bob Wellander things about Cambodia, things about Jordan. If I had, maybe I could have postured him into a more cautious frame of mind. I don't know. I warned him.
Well, I don't want you to carry away anything that I've said in the way of questions to you. Cast aspersions on him.
No, because he has great integrity. See, I think he said he spotted the coincidence in the phraseology in this, and I haven't seen any of the Anderson articles.
Correct.
Article.
He's the one that raised it the first.
So, I mean, this is what we're taught to do, sir. If we find something that's wrong, we have to speak up and be accountable.
Sure.
Regardless of the consequences. And he did. And I've tried to give you the best of.
Bobby, do you think the job is impossible?
Do I think the job is impossible? The job has lasted 10 years, and.
I mean, but to serve two men.
It's an anomaly.
And to serve them, I mean, you touched on, you know, the.
No, sir. I don't think that it's. If I were king, I would establish a liaison officer in residence here in the White House, who would represent the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
How about the Secretary of State?
I think that there's liaison going on with the Secretary of State at every level, sir. I think the NSC staff is full of Foreign Service officers who maintain daily relationships. I couldn't order a car to go to the Pentagon, but there wasn't an NSC staff officer on his way to the State Department. I thought this was a valid, proper means of liaison. I think the CIA has got liaison. Now, I think that there is the strangest relationship with the Department of Defense.
My section.
And I suggested several times that I represent Mr. Laird over here. And Admiral Moore, and everyone said no. It has never worked for 10 years. I think, sir, that it's a great loss. If I have one regret, it's that the billet has been disestablished. And if I were to forecast events, I'd say that within 1 year, you'll have to do something to recreate it. Possibly not at the flag officer level. I think it's too senior. I don't think there should be a general, or I don't think there should be an admiral in the job. Because it is sort of demeaning to be the guy who has to run messages for people. I didn't mind it because I was doing it for people that had such great responsibilities. But Henry gave me special tasks to do that if I couldn't tell you on tape what they are, but they involved things that I know are happening, and there was never a leak. And Henry said, it's amazing that you're absolutely secure. Well, I have great regret that they abolished the job. I feel very, very sad to learn that Radford is not to be trusted, because I think all of us would feel that way about someone that we knew that we trusted. It's a tough thing. I think it probably would be comparable to learning that you had an unfaithful wife or a drug addict son or all the other tragedies that befall us. I have, I just have two sons, and both of them are, I hope, postured to serve as I am. One is a Lieutenant JG in the Navy in one of my ships, and the other is about ready to become a law enforcement officer, I hope, here in the White House. So I give serious thought to these things, Mr. Ehrlichman.
Well, I'm sure you do. This is something that we don't treat lightly here, as you can imagine, and we share your concern. I'm not so sure about the judgment to move the office. It's something that Henry had to deal with.
Oh, he had to do that.
Very often out of an episode like this, why
comes greater strength.
Constructive things do result, so we're hopeful on it. And I'll appreciate your respecting our confidence, and we'll respect yours.
I will say nothing about this to anybody.
As far as we're concerned, this tape is not going to receive any dissemination at all, and be very closely held. I don't think you have any concern about its use in any defense quarters.
I only would not want anything to embarrass the relation, to worsen, that's not the word I want. I would not want anything to influence the relationship between the chairman and the president.
Well, the president's determined to maintain that relationship on the most cordial basis. So those are our marching orders.
The liaison job is a tough one, because even on the most simplest things. If I could give you a couple of examples, maybe off the record.
All right. Well, why don't we just terminate the tape?